If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
You have found the Shanny Pants Show. Hello, it's Shanny, the least influential influencer that there ever was. With a heart full of laughter and a journey that runs deeper than the trendiest makeup you may know me from my ridiculously comedic fashion and makeup tutorials on social media, but guess what? There's so much more to the story. I was born, raised, and married in a cult. When I left the cult at 31 years old, I had no knowledge about real life or how to process what I had been through. I felt very alone. The past couple of years, I've been on an incredible journey of learning, growing, and recovering, and I'm excited to share this with you. I'll bring you stories from the Cultiverse, where many cult survivors and experts share their knowledge and experiences. Their stories are more than inspiring. They're a roadmap to self-discovery and resilience. So get ready for a podcast that's part comedy, part wisdom, and a whole lot of heart. If you feel alone in your journey, my hope is that that will change once you hear these stories. Welcome to the Shanny Pants Show. I am so excited today to have Rebecca here with me, and I really appreciate you coming and being on the Shanny Pants Show. I've been very excited to talk to you and get to know your story a little more. So why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself for the audience and just tell us who you are.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I've been excited too. So my name is Rebecca Drumsta, and kind of my little one-liner thing is 4 different religious cults impacted the foundation of my life. So my childhood started as this kind of, they're all linked, this chain link of all these different religious cults. And to the outside world, we look like a normal family, just in normal church type settings, just a conservative Christian family. But then not everything that glitters is golden, is it? So that's kind of my background. Now, though, I'm married. I'm a mom. I am in leadership in an international nonprofit. And then I also do work with religious trauma. I do consulting and coaching, and I write and I blog and I do all the things. And that led me into this work of, I know what it's like to be a new mom and scared out of your mind with what you believe, because you start realizing, I can't raise my kid this same way. But I don't know what's right. I don't know who I can trust. I don't know what to believe. I don't know who I am anymore. And so I kind of got into the religious trauma space because I never wanted there to be another mom who felt like me and felt like she was the only one and she didn't know what to do. And so that's really that, and the birth of my daughter is what that was the catalyst that really threw me into understanding and doing this work.
That's awesome. And it's so interesting because that was kind of having my first child. Our kids are adopted, but when we got him and started raising him when we were still in our cult, That was one of the main things that was getting me on the exit, because I kept thinking, like, when he was two or three when we removed ourselves. And I just kept thinking, like, as he gets older, I have to lie to him. Because I don't believe these things. And that started feeling so icky to me, to just like, oh, here we go again. Like, just how I was raised, it was so confusing. Our family was always in trouble, and because we were like rebellious, and, you know, and I'm like, oh, here we go again. Like, I can't even imagine, you know, he's this little toddler right now, but putting him through what we had to go through. So that's interesting, because that was exactly my mindset around it. It was like, I'm going to be lying to my kid. I'm going to be lying to my kid. So let's go back to what led up to this, and start with like your childhood and kind of how you were raised, and then kind of your movement through, like you said, multiple different groups until you decided you were done with all of them.
Some of my first religious memories, like being 4, 3, 4, 5 years old, most of them are not positive. Mm. One of the first being, I'm around 5. My family had decided to leave a church. So this church had become a cult to itself, because the pastor would do things such as, everyone in the church stand up. Now I'm going to say something that I believe or want to have happen in this church. If you do not agree with me, you must walk out the doors right now and never come back. And no one is allowed to speak to them ever again. They are now shunned from our church. So this completely divided my own family. This divided friends, this divided all of this. And so my family eventually decided to leave that church, which again had become a cult to its own self, because of the leadership, because of the style. Also within that denomination, I've heard the same type of thing happened. It kind of like the Independent Fundamental Baptist, it kind of festered and went from one church to the next. But they did leave. And so I'm 5 years old. I'm on the church playground. My family had been in leadership, and so they had to finish up some things before we left. And a little girl walks up to me and picks up sand and just throws it into my eyes. And she starts telling me that my family's going to hell, that nobody's ever going to talk to us again, that we're horrible people because we're leaving this church. And so that's what I remember. Like, wait a minute. So if I go to another church, I go to hell. And then also around 5 years old, there had been a family that had been part of a Mormon sect down in Mexico. It was a Texas-Mexico sect, and that had been founded by one man who was the father, the leader of this. And one of his daughters and her husband and 6 children escaped. They left, and they ended up coming to our church, and they were not going back. They refused to go back. So the father was murdered as an atonement killing. And the parents were very close to my family. And again, at 5 years old, I go, wait a minute. So if you don't believe like I do, or again, I leave, then you can be killed.
Oh my gosh.
And so those are my first 2 memories. There's a few others, but those are the really big ones that impacted trusting people, feeling betrayed, you know, learning, okay, I have to follow this line, you know, the party line very carefully, or else really bad things will happen to me. And so those are the first 2 cults that impacted me greatly. And then my family moved into the Independent Fundamental Baptist Church and joined Bill Gothard's organization called the IBLP. And that's where I grew up the bulk of my years. And as anybody kind of in the uber conservative homeschool space, there's so many more shoot-offs. Whether we want to talk about Vision Forum and Gwen Shamblin with the Way Down Workshop, or, you know, all of these others. Yes. Thank you, Gwen, for my body in the dishes. Thank you. So those are the bulk of my childhood, though, was within the IFB denomination and Bill Gothard, which there's Shiny Happy People now that helps us understand that. Right. And then there's a new documentary called Let Us Pray. It will talk about exposing the IFB and all the hidden abuses in that denomination. So yeah, that's like the really how fast, what, 3-4 minute I can explain it all. That's my background.
So were you married? Were you able to marry outside of the church? Did you marry inside of the church or the group? How did that work?
Yeah. It's kind of a yes and no. Okay. So my husband, I actually met him at church. He walked in and he sat down behind me and saw this little hourglass figure, super long curly hair. He's like, yeah, I'm going to sit over there. And so he walks and sits down. We shake hands. It's shaking hands time at church. And I just knew this man was going to change my life, like, instantly. Mm. It was that moment, not, oh my word, I'm going to marry him. He's my Prince Charming. No, it's just like, oh my goodness, this guy's going to change my life. I literally had that moment. And he was okay. Like, we weren't really interested in each other because courtship was the thing we had to do. And, but he had been discipled by a Bill Gothard family way back where he used to live when he'd become a Christian. And so because of that, because there were connections to the people who made sure he believed all the right things, in my little IFB church, then he was approved by my family.
Okay.
And
okay.
So he did not have a similar background to me at all. He had just moved to our town and was looking for a church and happened to walk in and met me and stayed. Oh, and wow. He wouldn't have stayed otherwise, but he met me. So yeah. And then the rest is history. But that's kind of how I met my husband. And yes, it was influenced by all the things.
Yeah.
But no, he has a very different background.
So he obviously stayed then because of you. How old were you at that time?
We were married when I was 22, almost 23.
Okay. Wow. Okay. Mm-hmm. So how long did you guys have to do your courtship situation for? How did that work?
It was really fast.
Oh, was it? Ah!
It was really fast. We courted for 3 months, were engaged for 3 months, and then got married.
Wow.
I do not recommend this to anybody who's listening, but
no.
That is how it went for us.
Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh. And are you still married to him today?
I am.
Okay. That's
by the grace of God.
Yeah.
And I will tell you, it has not been easy. So it's almost been 20 years, not quite, but almost. And being married to someone who grew up in all these religious cults and with the mind control and the purity culture. And I've not been easy to be married to from that perspective. I mean, he has got his own sets of issues. Don't get me wrong, but it's been hard because I didn't realize how deeply, of course you don't, you know, they talk about unpacking your baggage before you get married. Well, what happens if you think that your bags are Louis Vuitton and they're the most amazing things in the world because you've been told that your whole life,
right?
This is absolute truth and this is the best way to live and these are the whole right things. And then you start realizing, oh my word, this is just like the Walmart version.
this
really needs help,
right?
This is not cool. And so you don't realize you have baggage until you're in the middle of a marriage and you have a kid, and suddenly it's, what do we do? There's no help. There's no resources, but we're drowning.
And did you feel that way before you left, or was it just, did it get hard after when you started going through all of that? Because we did the same thing.
I didn't, and I did. So I lived in India for a while.
Okay.
And while I was there, I saw Christianity being done very differently. They had drums in their music. They danced. People would walk barefoot miles to go to church. They would bring a chicken or bring a bag of rice that they could have eaten for them, their family, but to give to God. People would get baptized in India, and that was the ultimate sign that you were changing your faith. And if you were Muslim in the community where I was, if you were baptized as a Christian, especially if you were a woman, your family might kill you. And I met a woman who that happened to.
Wow.
And then her child came to live at the orphanage where I was. And so I saw the completely different way of being a Christian. And I was young. I was 18 and 19 at that time. And so I began having questions. Why are they so, like, why are drums okay for them? And we say that they're evil and satanic. Why did, you know, all of these things didn't add up. And I was the same person in that country. But even some of the things that I believed were considered wrong there. And so that's where I started having these questions. But then you come home and it's like, oh, no. They're just uneducated people. Oh, no. Our version of Christianity is right. They just haven't been taught that yet. So getting married, you know, moving out about a year after we were married, my husband was like, we're leaving this church, by the way, bye. And as a good, submissive, obedient wife, I followed him. And that's how we got out of that church. And he would then tell me, I only stayed for you. So,
oh my gosh. So he was only in it for about a year and a half then.
In that church, yes. So again, he'd been discipled by the Gothard people when he was younger, but then he was only there. But he knew quickly that something was off. He didn't know how to say what it was. He just knew something was off. But he met me and he knew that, yeah, this is the person I'm supposed to spend my life with. And so...
Well, I'm so glad. Like, I love that you said it hasn't been easy, because no. I feel like so many people. So my husband was raised the exact same way I was. We were born into our group cult. And so we didn't have, we both have the same baggage or similar baggage, you know, going out of it. But it has not been easy. And we're at, I think, 23, we've been married 23 years now. And it has been a rough road. And I think people, and I'm sure you get this with helping people that are the exiting, you know, or from spiritual mm-hmm. abuse or religious abuse. So I'm sure you see it a lot, but it is, you know, you get out and you think, okay, well, for us that had lived in it our whole lives, it was truly like, what do we do? We didn't really know how to make our own decisions. Mm-hmm. Like you had mentioned, that stood out to me. Everyone else is wrong. All the other churches are wrong. All the other Christians are wrong because they don't know our way yet. And so it was kind of, you know, at the time I never would think, oh, it's scary. But looking back, I'm like, it was scary. We had no friends. We are all of a sudden cut off from, you know, so much family drama. Luckily, my family did get out at the same time as well, or around the same time. So we had that at least. But really, it was like, very weird because everyone else was wrong, you know? And so it was trying to figure that out of like, okay, wait, they said that they're Christians. They're really nice people, but we're not supposed to associate with them. Mm-hmm. And so it was very, very weird to.
So what helped you guys in the end? Where did you find help?
So like not until the last couple of years, like real help, but, initially, my husband met someone at his new, he got a new job, and he met this guy who lived like really close to us, and they were Christians. And so I forget how the first time happened, but we like got together with them. And it was truly so weird because we were supposed to associate with other people like ever. It was always our cult.
That's the world.
It's the world. Your world is this little group. And so the world is bad.
They're evil. They're going to take you straight to hell. They're going to destroy your families.
Yeah. So bad. So it was very weird, but we like met with them and I'm like, oh, these are very nice people. And we became really good friends with them. And so they were a big impact in that and us kind of realizing, okay, wait, that's okay. They go to whatever church and they're, doesn't even matter. Like, and then a lot of our age group had exited at the same time as us or around the same time. So we kind of started connecting back with some of the people that also had left. And that helped because we had some core relationships that were able to move forward. Yeah. And a lot weren't, you know, it is what it is. There's so much trauma involved with it all that I think it was hard for some people to reconnect. But well,
broken
that
relationships.
Helped.
Yeah. That's one of the big things, whether it's family or friends we grew up with. When you do choose to leave, you don't know, you may be on your own.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's very, and it just causes so much. Like we always were taught, you know, that we shouldn't have division and unity. We should all be united and no division. So they would use the word division as like, you're not following the rules, so you're causing division. And yet the division that they put on the families and the friendships and these lives was absolutely off. I mean, it's still going. So it's absolutely terrible, the division that it's caused. I've talked to people that would love to be on the podcast from my group, but they can't because their daughter's still in. And they're like, if she finds out I speak out about this, her husband won't let her talk to me. And we barely can talk as it is or whatever. And it's like, Yeah, I'm sure you see that all the time. And it's
well, that's why I didn't use my full name when I started blogging. I couldn't because I was scared. I had already lost so many people. I was already feeling like I was living this double life of what I really believe. And yet over here is what I was still, you know, going to the church or, you know, associating with certain people. And I was like, but I don't think like this anymore. And I would just have to keep my mouth shut. And it was one of the most courageous things at the time that I'd ever done was when I did, I put my full name on my website and not just, you know, the other name. And that felt like this huge reclaiming moment. And also I'm putting this banner in the sand, like, this is me, this is my belief, this is what I believe, you know? And so, yeah, those relationships, and that's one of the big, whether again, it's your husband and your children or your parents and your siblings and the people you grew up with. And that network changes so drastically. And something I've noticed is that when you come from the cult mentalities, like you were saying, no division and you have to agree with this, people are not equipped to handle differences. There is no mental health education. There is no, you know, resolution, conflict resolution training. And so we're just expected to do what you're told, follow the leaders, the whole Peter Pan, following the leader, that's what we're supposed to do and never ask questions. So when there is someone like you or me who says, this is not right, I am leaving. I mean, I was taught to stand up, like stand alone. I don't know if you were taught, stand alone for Christ. You're going to be, you know, have to do. So I began feeling like I'm standing alone. I'm doing what you taught me to do. It's just, you don't like what I'm saying. You don't like this stand I'm taking. Yes. And so because nobody has the tools, the skills, nobody knows how to navigate it. So then you and I, we're the ones who are going to therapy, who are getting these tools, who are, you know, trying to, we don't want to lose our families. I don't, you know, but then you're left with no choice. Because boundaries are not respected, they cause abuse, or they are continuing to be abusive. They are. So yeah, we get in these really awkward cycles and where we have to say, I break the cycle.
It has to happen. You know, it's so sad to look at, we have so many people that we know that are still, you know, a part of this cult. And we see videos from time to time, and we see the little kids that were little when we were, you know, we called ourselves young marrieds was what we were. And it's like now they're leading the singing and they're doing all the things. It's still
having
it's,
their own babies. And
gosh, yes. And I'm just like, just the freedom of getting out from underneath that is so powerful. And it just, for me, I just get sad. I still can get pretty angry at the leaders who are still doing what they're doing. But for me, it's mostly sadness, like for the people that are still involved, because I know what's on the other side and I know that it's possible. And like you were talking about the services or whatever you, I forget you referred to it on the inside, as far as mental health care and things like that. You weren't allowed to have any of that. And if you needed help, you went to the leader who no one wanted to do. And then there would be like, you know, kind of leaderish people that you could like confide in maybe. But then you find out, how does everyone else know about my issue all of a sudden?
Constant betrayal too. Yeah.
Yes. And it is, it's all different forms of betrayal. And there's so many, adults, I would say, not so many. There's a couple growing up that I, and my husband as well, really looked up to. And you really thought these are people you can trust. And then
hardcore, straight laced.
Yeah, the hardcore, they're a little bit more relaxed or whatever. And then to see how firm they're still standing in that, when you have had moments with these people that you know they do not believe, or at one point, they did not believe this hardcore. And now it's like, I don't know what
they're still in. It. You know, you're still saying that. And I'm thinking of one family that is coming to my mind right now. And it's like, they were the ones who didn't, you know, they let their daughter dress differently. They did different music. They went to movies when we weren't. And I'm like, okay, so they're not all the way in, but they're still there.
Yeah.
I'm just like you said. Yeah.
Yes.
There are like those people. But, you know, recovering from it, it's kind of the same way. Like, I've noticed this pattern where when you grow up in a very fundamentalist, legalist, religious background, usually the first thing we find is grace, because we didn't have any grace. So then there's a lot of people, that I still love very, very dearly, who get stuck and stop right there. That's it. That's as far as they go. This is freedom. So they get all the way out, and it's a lot. It's hard work. It's hard work to find grace, to embrace this new concept, and then they stop. Then the next one is gospel-centered everything. Well, this must be the answer. They have a gospel-centered church, a gospel-centered family, a gospel-centered all the things. So it's all about Jesus. It's all about Jesus. And okay, that's great. Okay, now where's the next, you know? So there's like these stages that people go through as they're getting out, but then we all tend, we get stuck.
Yes.
And the biggest part when I knew that I'd reached, so healing is one of those words that feels kind of ambiguous. It's like, mm-hmm. what does that really mean? Like, and perhaps to everybody it's different. But for me, healing means it's a level of awareness about my situation and myself. So that I can recognize triggers, I recognize patterns. And so healing means I have enough awareness of everything that I know what's coming and how to manage myself so that I don't cause harm to myself or other people. Because what we do is we get on those patterns, on those cycles. And if we don't stop long enough to have that self-awareness about the situation, our past, what's going on, you know, perhaps your spouse or your children, how things are impacting them. That's how we continue keeping the harmful patterns alive. And so we have to stop to gain that personal and larger scale awareness so that we don't continue those patterns. And so for me, that's what healing looks like. And as I began to have that greater awareness of myself, my situation, what I used to believe, where I'm going, why my parents joined this anyway, you know, why all of this happened, I began to see that everyone has the freedom to believe whatever it is they want to believe. And if I truly believe in freedom of choice, freedom of thought, then I have to let the people who are still in the cult have the freedom to believe that too. But I have the freedom to say how those beliefs caused harm to me and to the people I care about. So it's this weird balancing act of, if I truly believe in the freedom of mind, freedom of thought, freedom of expression, or what all the freedoms, then I have to also apply that to the world that I am walking away from. But it's heartbreaking because I know the hurt. I know the abuse that's happening back there. I know the control tactics that are being used and the manipulation and of the Bible and of spiritual practices. But I can't, you know, so it's the hand up, the hand down thing where the people that are looking for help, like I was at a time, I want to be there to grab them. But there's still days when I need help and I need therapy and I need friends. I need,
right.
You know.
Yeah. Well, and I think it's, when I think of healing too, I think it's ongoing. It will never be like, I'm healed. Yeah. It's going to be, you know, because life circumstances change, everything changes. But I like what you said with that. And I think about that as well as, you know, obviously people are still there for their reasons or whatever. Mm-hmm. But what is interesting to me is too, when we come from that, for me, when I come from that, it's been 12 years now, I still mm-hmm. remember what it was like to be that. So yeah. I still remember the judgment. I was super mean to my sister for a while because her and her husband left for a while. And I was super judgmental. I mean, we were, as a group of judgmental people, like we were it. But I can remember, and I think you know, my family, we were always a little bit on the outskirts. And I think mentally I was always, I have thoughts as that I can remember as a child questioning things. And so I feel like my mind, I was always a little bit on the like, is this okay? Like, I don't know why, but that's, and I think, but even with that, I think I still remember being right and knowing everything and accusing everyone else of being wrong. And so like when you picture them there still, I'm like, yeah, like I know what they're thinking. Like I know, I mean, not specifically them, but like I can remember being there. And so you understand like it, that draw, it's so heavy. And you have the families like mine and some even more that are there for generations. And it's just, it's all they know. And when you really are afraid of everything else and that's all you know, that's your cozy little safe place, you know? And what gets to me, and I like that you said that at the end there, it's the abuse that is the problem still. Yes, I want people to have the freedom to believe what they want, think what they want. I'm there with you. But it's the abusive type things, actions going on that are undeniably like not okay. And that's where I feel like when you do.
Well, if you take the. So when you were saying about how it's the abuse that is back there in the world that you and I have walked away from, that's the part that's like, ah, what do we do about it? But that's where, again, as I was saying earlier, people don't have the mental health tools or training or culture. And for me, I did not know what abuse was. So the women, the girls, the children that are left behind, they don't know they're being abused. I didn't know I was being abused. I had been taught that these certain things were biblical, that they were right. And so that's one of the reasons why the work you're doing, that I'm doing, that other survivors are doing really matters. Because when a woman especially, or a man, chooses to something's off and they start diving in and doing a little bit of looking around on the internet, if they can find a voice that says this is what abuse looks like, if you've been hit this way as a child, that is abuse. You've been spoken to this way by your husband, that is abuse. And so that is why it's so important for survivor voices to surface. And again, not every survivor can. There are so many different reasons. You mentioned it before. People can't come on and talk publicly because of what they will lose, or they're not ready, or it may actually hurt them. Not every survivor can tell their story publicly. It may cause, may re-traumatize. But the survivors who can really, there's so many layers to the people who are trying to get out, the people who are just out, being able to help name things of this is what abuse is, this is what it looks like, this is how it was.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Formed in the church, the family, the group that I was in. And this is how we are now all collectively saying no. The survivors, you, me, all of it, we're all saying no. It stops with me. My voice is one of the buck stops here moments. Your voice is that moment. We're
done. So. Right. Yeah. And I think that you're right. It's so, and that's where social media, podcasts, I mean, there's so many things that can make such an impact now. And I know for me, a couple years ago, I started listening to podcasts and this whole world, you know, opened up to me. Mm. And it truly was like free therapy in several different parts of my life that I needed help in. And I'm like, oh my gosh. And just hearing other people's stories, like what we're doing right here, was so impactful for me to realize like, oh, that's really similar to what I went through. How crazy. Okay. Wow. I'm not the only one. And I do think it's so valuable because I look back 12 years ago when we got out, there was nothing to look up that I could find, or if I had the means.
It was about 15 for me and there was nothing. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like, so that I think is, you're right. If the people keep speaking out, then hopefully that's where, like you said, they don't know it's abuse. When you're in it, you don't understand it's abuse. And I've done a lot.
I remember that moment again, still being a young mom, a couple month old baby. And my house was very, very creamy beige colored at the time, creamy carpet, creamy walls, creamy everything. And I remember sitting on my cream colored carpet next to my cream colored wall. And I start crying. I just sit down on the stairs because that moment of this was a cult hit me. And I also remember the wave, not on my cream colored stairs, but of I was abused. And so I know what those moments feel like. And they are, for me, it was life changing because that's when my mind and my heart were suddenly open to accepting new thoughts, because this just wasn't just odd. This wasn't just a little bit controlling and lots of rules. This was an abusive, controlling, manipulative environment that has caused harm. And so whenever I have a client or sit down with a friend or, you know, someone, and they have that moment of realization of either this was a cult or I was abused, I see that as a very sacred moment. Because again, it's like opening up your chest and exposing all of this stuff. And again, you didn't choose it. Oh, so many of us grew up in it. I didn't choose it. So, but it's this huge revealing moment where suddenly there's this pain and this release at the same time of, I didn't do it. It wasn't something wrong with me. And that moment of it was a cult or this was abuse is so pivotal in your life. But that's the scary moment, because then we can choose. And that, again, that's why healing matters, because I look even in the people who still identify as Christian today, but who are walking away from these movements, what we grew up in. If you don't stop long enough to heal, you're going to repeat the exact same unhealthy patterns. So it feels like I'm doing nothing. I'm doing nothing. I'm doing nothing. It's been 5 years. I'm doing nothing. But you are, because you're not, you're breaking those cycles. You're breaking those patterns. And so once you've had that opening of the chest, this was abuse moment. Now you can begin that awareness, which leads to the healing, which leads to not repeating these patterns in your family, in your community. If you're still practicing a faith in your faith communities.
Found a group of people we really enjoy that we go to church. Guess what though? We don't show up a Sunday. No one's calling us to see where we were. So that there's some freedom.
Where are
there.
You?
I know. It's like, what? I don't have to go every Sunday. It's amazing. But women's Bible study in a church setting. I did it. Okay.
Laughing.
So when our girls were young, I joined like a MOPS group, right? Where like moms, what does that stand for? Moms of preschoolers?
Mothers of preschoolers.
Okay, yeah. So I joined one of those because I had friends that were in it. So I'm like, okay, that's cool. It was okay, but I had a very hard time with it. And
yes,
part of it just personal reasons, and part of it definitely background abuse, spiritual abuse reasons. Now, the church we go to now, love, we are... We're definitely raising our kids differently. They have the choice to go to church. I'll never force them to go. They're on their own journey. Like, I'm okay with it. I am never going to put that on my kids.
But think about the women's group thing again, because we both were having reactions to you saying women's group.
Okay.
I'm remembering trying to join one when my daughter was tiny. I couldn't fit in. I think I even wrote a blog piece about it at the time. I probably took it down, but I didn't fit in. And I was like, part of it's because I traveled the world when I was young with Bill Gothard's organization. I'd seen things. I'd gone places. I'd led groups of 600 children at a time when I was 16 years old. Like, there was all these lived experiences that I had that I couldn't relate to the women. There was no way I could relate. And then they would sit around and whine and complain. And my husband never helps. And so there was no edification. And so, but now looking back, you mentioned, yes, the spiritual abuse, the this. But I think, too, it's the mental health aspect.
Yes.
There is no support for moms. There's no true support. It's just we all come together. We get an hour of free babysitting. We drink coffee, listen to a lady talk for 20 minutes, and then we whine and complain because we're so stressed. We're so overwhelmed and nobody's helping us.
Mm-hmm. And you know what else? Yeah, go ahead.
For it.
No, you please go.
I want to hear your perspective.
No, that just brought something to mind for me when you were talking that I'd never considered. And so I'm just processing it. But I think when you were saying whine and complaining, that is one of the biggest things that I'm like, why? Like, is this just a complain fest? But when you said that about the abuse, I'm wondering, because of my background, we weren't allowed to whine and complain.
Nope. You
never said, I'm upset that my husband didn't take the trash out. You never would complain. So maybe these women were not raised the way we were and have the freedom to know that this other group of women won't judge them on fussing about the husband taking the trash out. And I just can't connect with that because I'm still... so much of the like, you're fine, just hold it in, you're fine, get over it, wait till you have therapy, you're fine. So maybe, I'm not saying I still want to go join thing, but maybe that they do have more freedom in feeling like, hey, these women have my back and this is my moment. And it, I don't know. But I think for me being, you know, coming from my background, I have to be the one that chooses, I tried that. Okay, met some nice people. It wasn't for me. And I think I think back when I was doing MOPS years and years ago, I wasn't at that mentally sound space where I could make a choice like that. Where now I'm like, I can still participate in different aspects of this church. This part of it doesn't work for me.
And I like that you're saying it that way too, because I always thought there was something broken with me that I couldn't fit into, whether it was a secular or a religious mom's group. There's something so wrong with me. But I like how you're saying that. It's like, it's just not working for me right now. This is just not what I need right now. And that's part of the growth, of the awareness about myself. But then it's tearing down some of that old stuff where probably like me, you were taught you had to sacrifice for everyone. You just serve everyone. And then that's why we were never allowed to ask for things for ourselves. Self-care was a dirty, evil, worldly word. And so even recognizing this is not a space that is constructive for me, that was something I couldn't do back as a new mom. I just thought I was broken and so messed up that I was the problem.
And it just made it worse. Like, I know for me, when I was going to MOPS, I would leave, everyone's leaving encouraged and happy, and I was leaving depressed, like, ugh, you know, like, I didn't get anything from that. And I tried really hard. Again, like, probably you, I don't remember thinking, but I probably was thinking, oh, what's wrong with me? Why am I not having a good time here? Everyone else is doing great. Yeah.
I can't make friends either.
Yeah, yes, I know. It's so, now I love it when I meet people. We just met last year. We're really good friends with them now. And I work for them, actually. But this new couple that we didn't know anything about. And we were at a work thing. And then afterwards, like, you want to go to dinner? So we had our kids. We're like, yeah, let's go. Mm-hmm. And so we sit down at the table, never had talked seriously with these people. And they're just like, so how did you guys like meet? And we're like, well, we knew each other when we were in the cult and we got married in the cult. And they're like, so now it's hilarious. But I love telling people it now. And one of the it's a very pride thing. I love hearing people are like, how did you turn out so normal?
That's awesome. And I'm like, that's not a pride thing. That's not a pride thing. See, I had a friend of mine recently. I told her if I say this, I sound so prideful. And she's like, shut up, Rebecca. When you're prideful, I will tell you. Thankfully, she's old enough to be my mother. And so she can do those things. So, but we've been taught it's pride. It's not pride. Yes.
Thank you. Yeah. Yeah. Right. But yeah. No. But I love hearing that. I'm like, oh, I'm glad that someone thinks I'm halfway normal. But it takes a lot of work. You know, it takes a lot of work. And it's not an easy road. I feel like I say this all the time, but I do feel like so many people, you know, go through their journey so differently, whether they get therapeutic help, whatever it is they do, it's different. And my thing is, I just like you were talking about the different levels of stuck. I've never really heard that way. And thank you for sharing that because I feel like, yes. And that's,
you get overwhelmed. I can't do anymore. I can't do anymore. And I used to tell my husband so often, it's like, okay, I know the whole box concept, like put me back in the box, but I felt more like I was this like wild stallion inside like a pen in the middle of like Montana or Wyoming. And the gates open and I can see the gorgeous mountains and I can see, but I'm like, all right, I took a couple steps out. Now I'm going to go back in. Now I'm going to go two or three steps farther. That's it. But I never actually get up to the mountain all the way to see the views, to see the entire vastness of freedom that's available to me because it's so much work. It is so hard. And then you have all the layers of fear and all the what ifs and all the mindset from the mind control. But yeah.
And that's the thing. It's a lot of work. And I have like, I'll go through phases now, even doing exactly what you just said, where I'm just like, oh, it's too much. Like, and I think we have to be self-aware to where we know when we need a break from certain things. But I'll go through moments where I'm just like, I'm not going to journal right now. I'm not going to do anything right now. Like, I just need to do nothing. Just like get through the week and do nothing. And so I think being aware of kind of where we are, and that's been a process too for me mentally, is getting to a place where I am healthy enough to be aware, and not like it happens all the time, but of what I'm needing when I need some breaks from things, because I took a year off of almost a year off of the podcast completely because of a depressive episode I was having. And it was just like, I'm not accountable to anyone. It's my podcast and I need to do what I need to do. And I had to take a break
that is healing because you recognize it.
Yeah.
But you recognize what you needed. And you took action and you did it. So that is healing. Because I wouldn't have done that when I was 20 years old. I would have kept sacrificing and suffering and doing for others or the expectations.
That's all we did.
All this level of perfectionism that we've been handed. Yes. And also the level of imposter syndrome.
Oh.
Because we were like, I was taught to always deflect the glory, deflect the praise. So if I played a piano special or sang at church, I had such a wonderful coach, or my teacher was amazing. My parents really made me practice. Thank you for the compliment. I could never receive it because that pride thing. And so now as an adult, I feel like I'm nothing. Like, who am I to even be on the Shaney Pants podcast? Like, who am I? Like, I don't. And so because we were handed, like, imposter syndrome was wired into our DNA because we could never accept that praise and that glory. It all went to God or to our authority. Instead of saying, no, I have skills and abilities, or I have worked hard, or I need this, or I want that. There's nothing wrong with that. It just feels so opposite. It feels so wrong.
As you're saying that, I'm just like, because it's so even like, I think probably.
Me.
Yeah.
I'm the problem.
No. She's reading my journal again.
No, I promise.
But it's so true. And I think, okay, I've been out 12 years and that's still a huge thing I deal with. And I've like the last several years been pretty, you know, online a lot, on social media a lot. And so I'll get a lot of compliments. It is still the hardest thing for me to just respond, thank you. Like, I have to be like, oh, you're so sweet. Literally, I'll say, you're so sweet. That's so kind of you to say thank you. Like, I can't just say thank you. I have to give
because
them
you don't
a
think
compliment
they mean
that.
It.
Right. Because I'm like, it's not that funny. It wasn't that good. Like,
And actually, it was, but okay.
Well, thank you. Look at me. Look at me just saying thank you. I'm all by myself.
Perfect. I'm so proud of you.
Oh, thank you. Thank you again. But it's awful. And it's like, here I am. I'm 42 years old and I can't just accept a compliment. Like, I literally
I think they honestly are giving you one because they mean it.
I know. Yeah. But you're right. It's in the DNA. Like, it is so a part of our life. And like the judgmentalness, that's one of the biggest things when I got out. I'm like, I'm over being judgy. Because, and we had different levels. I felt like there's still people that we're friends with now that have gotten out as well that I can't stand being around just because of how judgmental they still are. But that's one thing. It's in here still, like, but it's getting better. You don't say it. And I was never one probably to say it that much anyway, but I feel like, okay, 12 years out, it's still in there. Like, it's definitely getting better. It's getting
I'm at the post office like last year and I see this guy, like, his pants are hanging down with his boxers hanging out. He's got, I don't know, like, you just look at this like rocker punk, whatever dude. And I sit in there and I'm like judging this guy. Oh my word. Pull your pants up. Where is your mama? Like, oh my word. Then the next thing, he's already out of the post office. He happened to see an old lady coming up the sidewalk. He goes and he waits for 3 minutes holding the door open.
Oh my gosh.
So this lady, and I'm like, okay, I just learned a lesson. Why am I still judging this dude by his appearance? I know better than that.
Right.
Why am I doing this? This is not right. Like, he's just expressing his own inner feelings and his own creativities and his own. Why am I judging this boy?
Boys. Why don't you talk a little bit about kind of what you're doing now? I know we briefly have touched on it. What you're doing now, books you have available, and where people can find you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of doing lots of things right now. I have my job and then I have my other job. And then isn't that what we all do anymore?
Yeah. All the things.
So this year, I was a co-author on a paper on religious trauma. It was released by the Global Center for Religious Research, and it helped us show that there's a lot of people in the United States right now that are struggling with religious trauma, and religious trauma can come from your home environment. It can come from a ministry. It could come from your church. So there's many places where we can have experienced an abusive power and control dynamic that's led to this form of trauma. So I was part of that research, writing that paper, and then I'm doing speaking. I'm speaking at a couple different e-conferences coming up. One of them actually talk about tending the wounds of religious trauma. That one's coming up in December 9th. But I'm still continuing to blog. I'm doing that. I'm doing my other work. I'm doing some research with the DNA side of my work, the identity trauma with DNA discoveries. Doing some research with McGill University up in Canada. And I just kind of have a bunch of irons in the fire. But yes, I do have one book out right now. There's a couple more in the works. But my one book is called When Family Hurts. And we touched on that a little bit in our conversation about how relationships, even though we've healed and we've moved forward, it's kind of one of those scars that's always there. And so I wrote the book. It sounds so cliche, but I wrote the book I needed that I couldn't find. And there was a situation where decisions had to be made quickly, but there's not enough time to go to therapy session after therapy session. It would have cost me like 10 grand in a month to get all the therapy that I needed. And so I wrote this book as a 30-day self-coaching guide for healing and clarity. And it was, it's a simple book, but it was questions that to ask yourself to help you understand you, what you need, why you need it, the boundaries you might need to put in place, the things you need going forward. And it's if there's, you know, anything in a family relationship. Part of the work I do with the nonprofit, with the DNA surprises, when you take an at-home DNA test, surprise, your dad's not your dad. That's what people are finding out all over the world. And so there was this crossover with families and feeling betrayed by family, feeling hurt by family, being hurt or abused by family. And so this book kind of felt like it would meet some for both groups of people that I'm working with right now. And I wrote that book. So in 30 days, I hope that when you go through the book, that you will have better clarity at what you need to go forward. And so there's little journaling sections. You can just read it. You don't have to journal. I'm not a journaler, but yet. Perhaps someday. But it's just one of those that ask you the questions to really get you to think about what you need, who you are, what you want, where you're going in whatever situation you find yourself in with your family. And so you can find me on Twitter/X. You can find me on Instagram and Facebook. And then my website is my name, RebeccaJumpster.com. And so, I don't know. I'm just kind of taking opportunities as they come, and we shall see where we go next. It's exciting.
It is. It's so exciting. And I'll definitely put all your handles and information on your book in the show notes, so everyone can find all the information there.
Thank you.
But I really appreciate you spending time with me today. I have been looking forward to this conversation, and I just learned so much about you. So I feel like we just kind of got started.
We did. I know. We need like a follow-up to the follow-up.
Yes.
No.
Yes. I seriously feel like next season is just going to be like, and we're going to follow up with everyone else because I want to talk to them again. So
that's awesome. Yeah.
I know. Why not? So
that would be great.
But I really appreciate all that you're doing and sharing your wisdom here with us today.
Wisdom comes from experience, and not all experience is positive.
Right. But use it.
Exactly. That's what I was going to say. We got it. And that's take the good, take the ugly, and let's do something to help other people with it. And create healthy spaces for our children or for the next generation coming behind us. So if they do choose to go into religious communities, whether it's a church or friends or whatever, that they're healthy, that they're safe, that they have the tools that they need to recognize this is controlling or this is abusive or this is a safe place where I can ask questions or be different or have different beliefs. And I've always raised my daughter with the, is it wrong or is it different?
I like that.
And so if it's different, that's fine. Now, wrong crosses boundaries. Well, are we lying? Are we controlling somebody else? Are you, being manipulative so you get your own way? There's definitely still right and wrong, but is this situation or this person wrong or just different?
I like that. Well, and I as we're ending, I think
and
like,
keep going.
Yeah. Here we go. We'll turn it into a two episode session. But I feel like what you said is very important there. And that's something with my kids that I really am trying to do a lot differently than how we were raised is we talk about everything. And like when you mentioned boundaries and stuff, whatever group, whether it's school, church, the kids are in sports, whatever, I don't care what group it is. Like there are things that are not okay. There are things where you tell me immediately. So like being that open with our kids in our home, I feel like is so important because they're going to get involved with something along the line, whether you're going to church or wherever you go, yoga, whatever you do, they're going to get involved at some point in something where they're going to need all this information. So
their gut is going to tell them something's off.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I think
it's so important to have those conversations with our kids. And also just because you and I grew up under authoritarian control. We grew up with our parents of like, they must be perfect. And we never questioned them. And we're not allowed to, at least I wasn't allowed to ask about their past. I wasn't allowed to, all of these things. So if you and I are just upfront about who we are and our struggles and the things that we're learning, to me, it's like, that just makes you so much more real to your children and lowers their, I have to be perfect. And then when those times do come along when they have to say, okay, mom, this person at school did or said this, and I think I need to talk to you about it. You already have that safe place going where you have been vulnerable with your children. You've actually said, mommy was wrong. I'm sorry. Will you forgive me? You know, you, yeah, every day pretty much. Yeah. But it's that new pattern that we're breaking the old cycles. And being a cycle breaker, excuse me, but being a cycle breaker sucks. It's like, it's so hard because, yeah. And then when you have, when you're married, you have the two of you coming together and you're both breaking generational patterns and cycles. And it's like, what are we doing? But your life's work is breaking those patterns. And it's so important for our children to watch us doing that, to understand why we're doing that. And they get to be part of us establishing the new healthy boundaries, the new healthy ways of managing conflict, the new healthy ways of interacting with people and viewing and how we view people. And we can become that safe space for our neighborhood, for the school, for the sports teams. Our family can right. be the safe space.
Right.
The ones who bring peace to the world.
Yes. And are accepting of all. And yeah, there. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's so many things that, yeah, I've been trying to impart wisdom upon my children where it is just more, yeah, definitely not perfectionism going on over here. That's for sure. We have a
while mommy still wants to be a perfectionist. I'm telling you, you don't have to be. Although right. I really don't like that outfit. And I think you look silly, but you know what? You get to wear it
every day. Because you have... That's just like... Don't say anything. Don't
some
say
of that
anything.
Is
Don't
just momming, but some of it's also, for yeah. example, I will give you a quick example. My daughter was like maybe 3 or 4, I don't remember. And this guy hit us. It wasn't a super huge wreck, but we had Taco Bell in the car. And so she has, whatever she was eating goes all over her clothes. She's in her car seat, goes all over her clothes. And do you know what the first thing I did after I made sure my husband and my child were safe, because I wasn't driving? The first thing I did was I started cleaning up the Taco Bell in my car, and then I pulled out the clean clothes out of her diaper bag and put clean clothes on because I didn't want the police officer to see my child with food all over her clothing. That is the programming I'm talking about. That is the perfectionism. And I was like, I wanted to stick that bow back in her hair too, but she wouldn't let me at the time. Before the officer gets there, clean up my car, clean up my child. Not, we were just in an accident. Okay, we're all good. So those are the things that you and I have been deconstructing, have been rebuilding, have been telling our children, I don't care if there's taco juice all over your shirt. Right. You were just in an accident. Just sit still and take deep breaths and make sure you're safe and healthy.
Right, right. Yeah. That sounds all too familiar because it as an adult, we're constantly, or I'm constantly in my brain, like doing like you're, it's always there. And so it's like always it's work. And again, that's where it's work to be in recovery. It's work to be healing. And I think that's why a lot of people don't do it because it is a lot of work.
It's the pendulum swing.
I know.
Like I knew a family who dressed, you know, they had the dresses with the high necks and their arms were covered and they wore the head coverings. And in a week's time, they were at the beach in bikinis. And while, they have the freedom to do that, it was really, really, really fast. So that's the pendulum. But then I've also known people who go, oh my goodness, this was all wrong. Boom. I'm no longer a Christian. I hate faith-based anything. I hate God, which again, you have the freedom to go there, but that's really, really fast. And so that's the pendulum, that's the healing part has to happen. And then what if you are coming from a place of healing, of awareness, of understanding all the whole picture, that's all. You know those cameras where you stand in the middle and then the camera like swirls all the way around you now? So that's what healing is. You're here in the middle, but you understand everything that's going on around you and why it's impacting you or someone else or why people made those choices. Then you make the decision to wear the bikini at the beach, or then you decide, I'm no longer going to be a person of has any faith. I'm an atheist, or I'm a what? So instead of just choosing these quick reactionary things, take the time to heal first and say, I don't know right now, but I'm healing.
Oh,
that's right.
Forever. Oh my gosh. Okay. Now we're for sure really ending. So thank
you. Are we done? We're done. We're okay.
Done. I mean, we're not even close to done, but we're ending this one.
Perfect.
Really appreciate you being here. And we'll definitely have to do this again.
Thank you all for joining me for another episode of the Shani Pant Show. I really appreciate you guys hanging out with me every week. You can find all of my links to all my social medias, anything your heart desires, at shannypantshow.com. You can even find my amazing merch is back up and running there. And you can email me from there, all the things, all the things. Also, you always ask, how can you help me out with this whole podcast situation? You can subscribe to my podcast. You can leave reviews. You can share it with friends. I appreciate it all. So I am super excited to bring you guys the rest of the season. It's going to be amazing. And I'll see you next week.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.